For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is December the 7th, and we are in Yeshayahu. We are in Perek Zion, chapter 7. So, as I mentioned in my email, we are about to jump ahead by over 40 years and move to the time of the reign of the king Ahaz. Before we do that, I want to mention, I had mentioned at the end of the last class, that in the last pasuk of Perek Vav of chapter 6, Yeshayahu mentions that the destruction, as the Jews are the evil people, are weeded out until finally there's only going to be tzaddikim, there's only going to be righteous people. It says, "Ka'ilah v'cha'alon," like an elah tree and an alone tree, that when they shed all of their leaves, all you have left is the main part of the tree, and that's going to be like the tzaddikim, like the righteous people. So the Elah and the Alon are mentioned in this coming week's parasha, in Parshas Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayishlach, we find the mention of both of these trees regarding Yaakov Avinu. Now, we spoke about this when we learned Sefer Hosea, in the book of Hosea, because there's also a reference to the Elah and the Alon. Over there, in addition to the Elah and the Alon, is also mentioned the Livneh, which is a third tree. And there's a pasuk there in the fourth chapter of Hosea that mentions the Elah, the Alon, and the Livneh. Here, only the Elah and the Alon are mentioned. So I want to briefly review what we said then, and we can apply it over here as well. In this week's parsha, the Elah is mentioned after the whole story with Shechem, and after Shimon and Levi and the brothers wipe out the city of Shechem. Then Hashem appears to Yaakov, and he tells him that he should travel to Beis El, and Yaakov tells the people of his household that they should get rid of all of the Elohei HaNechar Asher B'yadam, all of their foreign gods that are in their hands. How do they have foreign gods? Because they had taken all the booty from Shechem, and among that booty was things that were used for Avodah Zarah. So he tells them to get rid of those things. They give over all of their all of the things that were related to Avodah Zarah. They give them to Yaakov, and it says, Vayitmon osam Yaakov tachas ha'elah asharim Shechem. Yaakov buried them under the tree that was with Shechem, near Shechem. So under this elah tree, he buries the Avodah Zarah. Later, the Torah tells us, not much later in this week's parasha, the Torah tells us that Vatamas Devorah meinekes Rivka, that Devorah, the wet nurse of Rivka, dies. When Rivka got married to Yitzchak, then Lavan and her mother gave her, along with whatever else they gave her to take into the marriage, they gave her her wet nurse to help with the future children. So Devorah was her name, not the same Devorah as the Neviah Devorah. And Rashi explains that Rivka had sent Devorah to go tell Yaakov that it was time to come home, which she had told him she would. In Parshas Vayetze, she told him that she would send to him to come home when it was time to come home. I'm sorry, Parshas Tolos, she said she would send to him when it was time to come home. So she had sent Devorah to go tell him it was time to come home, and Devorah died on the way back. So it says here, Vatamas Devorah meinekes Rivka, that she passed away. And it says, Vatikaver Mitachas the Beis El. She was buried under Beis El. Beis El is on a mountain, so it's towards the bottom of the mountain that she was buried. Tachas ha'alon, under the alon. Now Rashi, in this week's parasha, says the alon means under the plain. It doesn't mean tree. But alon can also mean tree, and it can mean she was buried under the alon tree that was there. Rashi explains also that the Medrash tells us why is this mentioned that Devorah died? Because in addition to the death of Devorah, Yaakov was also told about another death, and that is the death of his mother Rivka, and she also died at that time. She didn't die in that place, she died in Eretz Yisrael, and of course she's buried in the Maaras HaMachpelah, but he was informed of her death at the same time that Devorah died. And then immediately afterwards, Hashem appears to Yaakov and tells him that he's going to have his name changed, or his name is changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. And Rashi explains that Hashem appears to Yaakov over there because he's doing Tanchumei Avelim, that he is being Menachem Avel, because Yaakov is now in Avelos because his mother had passed away. And Hashem is, kiviyachol, so to speak, he's being Menachem Avel. So the booty of Shechem is buried under the Elah tree, and Devorah, the wet nurse of Rivka, and representing the death of Rivka, is buried under the Alon tree. Rashi explains that the reason why the Torah does not say explicitly the death of Rivka, why is it said in such a roundabout way, in such a hidden way? Shali kalalu habrios hakeres shiyatza menu Esav. That the people, the creatures, shouldn't curse the womb from which Esav emerged. That even though, of course, Rivka is the mother of Yaakov Avinu, and the greatness that was brought into the world through Yaakov Avinu is unparalleled, and therefore you would think that people should praise Rivka, but the concern is that Esav has brought so much suffering into the world, and Esav comes from Rivka, that instead the reaction of people will be one of negativity towards Rivka rather than positivity. And therefore the Torah does not publicize the death of Rivka, but rather says it in this roundabout way. Now that may just reflect human nature, that people tend to focus on the negative, people, especially if they are suffering, have a hard time seeing the positive, and that may be the point that the Torah is making. At any rate, the death of Devorah symbolizes the death of Rivka, or is connected to the death of Rivka, and she is buried under the Alon tree. And the booty of Shechem is buried under the Elah tree. Now, the booty of Shechem, of course, is Avodah Zarah booty. We also know the Avera that Shechem did was Giloy Arayis, was immorality. But really, as we explained in Hosea, what Shechem was trying to accomplish when he took Dina, you see, he didn't take Dina simply out of it was not simply an act of passion. He took Dina in a very calculated way. He did it in a public way, which would normally not be done. It would normally be done in a private way, but he did it publicly. And he did it on purpose. And the reason why he did it, as we explained when we learned Parashas Vayishlach way back when, is he did it because he wanted to make it a fait accompli that he should be part of the Jewish people. He wanted to force Yaakov, that Yaakov would need him to be part of the Jewish people, because now that he took Dina, there would be no way not to include him in the Jewish people. That was Shechem's goal. That was his aim. The brothers, of course, made sure that would not be the case, and they wiped out not only Shechem, but his entire city, that they should not be part of the Jewish people. Yaakov Avinu does not agree with Shimon and Levi's way of dealing with Shechem. What would Yaakov have done? I don't know. But clearly, the reaction of Shimon HaLevi is to make it clear and obvious that we are not allowing this foreign influence into the Jewish people. Shechem is not a person that belongs with the Jewish people, and therefore they react this, they wipe him out. Esav, more than anybody else, is trying to become, if not part of the Jewish people, but part of the legacy, the mission of the Jewish people. The whole reason why Yitzchak had intended to give Esav the brachos was because Yitzchak intended that Esav should be the primary support staff for Yaakov in Yaakov's mission of bringing Hashem into this world. Yitzchak evidently believed that Esav could be part of that. Rivka understood that he could not be part of that. And therefore, Rivka is the one who ensured that Esav would not be part of the mission of Yaakov Avinu, and instead Yaakov would take the brachos, and Yaakov would be alone without Esav in this mission of bringing Hashem into this world. Rivka, therefore, becomes the antithesis of Esav's attempt to join this mission, of being part of the main mission of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at least in the way that Esav wanted to. And Rivka thwarts that. So the brios, the creatures, might curse the womb from which Esav emerged, but the truth is the person who brought Esav into this world is also the person who ensured that Esav would not be part of the main mission of the Jewish people by making sure that Yaakov would get the brachos. The Elah tree with the burial of the booty of Shechem under it represents this steadfast this rigidity in making sure that those who would force their way into the Jewish people in a way that would bring down the Jewish people, that would be Shechem, and try to make it that they be part of the Jewish people, that is not going to be allowed, and that we are not going to allow ourselves to have that influence. Shechem tried to do it in the way they tried to do it. He didn't do it with a sword. He didn't do it with attacking the Jewish people in that way, but he did attack one person. But again, his intent was to become part of the Jewish people, and the brothers stood up to that, and they said no, and the booty being buried under the Elah tree represents that clear distinction between us and those who would seek to water down the Jewish people. The Alon tree with the burial of Devorah representing the death of Rivka also represents, this is a little bit different, but it's the same idea, that we are going to make sure that those who do not belong as part of the mission are not going to be part of the Jewish people, and that is Esav cannot be part of the Jewish people. Of course, we know that Gerim, the converts, play a very important role in the Jewish people. Even the Malchus, even the royalty of Malchus-based David is based on Gerim, on converts. But that is presuming a convert who is sincere and who is going to elevate the Jewish people rather than the opposite. But those who would seek to join the Jewish people, not by living up to our standards, but instead by creating lower standards, like Shechem and like Esav, so that cannot be acceptable, and that is, in this week's parasha, both the Elah tree and the Alon tree represent the fact that that will not be allowed to happen. Here in this pasuk, at the last pasuk of Perek Vav, chapter 6, so Yeshayahu mentions those two trees in showing how the Jewish people, that there will, the Rishayim, the evil people, will slowly but surely be weeded out, leaving only the righteous people. As we said last time, as the leaves are shed from these trees, leaving only the main body of the tree, meaning the which would be the tzaddikim, the main part of the Jewish people, like the Elah and the Alon, without allowing themselves to be influenced by those who would seek to water down our standards. And that is, I believe, why the Elah and the Alon are mentioned here. In Hosea, in Perek Dalet, in chapter 4, where the other tree that's mentioned is the Livne tree, so you can listen to that class when we had it a few years ago, and there we showed that the Livne tree represents Lavan. That in Parshas Vayetze there is a Livne tree mentioned, and that represents Yaakov's break from Lavan, who is actually related to us directly. He's the grandfather of the Shvatim. He's the grandfather of all of the 12 Shvatim. He's the grandfather because he's the father of Rachel and Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah. And so there also is an intent to break away from that influence of Lavan, and that's why that tree is mentioned over there as well. Now, we said that Perek Vav, chapter 6, dealt with, or was the first Nevuah of Yeshayahu, and it took place in the year of the death of Uzziyahu, which means the year of the great earthquake when Uzziyahu got Tsaras. We also know that Yeshayahu prophesizes during the reign of Uzziyahu, during the reign of his son Yosam, during the reign of his son Achaz, during the reign of his son Chizkiyahu, and until partially through the reign of his son Menashe, which is a long time. We are now about to jump ahead to the reign of Achaz. We were starting with the reign of Uzziyahu, and we're jumping ahead past Uzziyahu, past Yosam, into the reign of Achaz. How many years is that? So from the time that Uzziyahu got Tsaras until he dies, we mentioned last time, is 25 years. He had Tsaras for 25 years. Yosam, his son, who was a great tzaddik, as is Uzziyahu, they're both tzaddikim, but Yosam is a king for 16 years. We know that he runs the country for longer than that because he runs the country for the whole 25 years that his father had Tsaras, but part of his, or actually the main part of his righteousness is that he does not take any credit for himself, and he makes sure to that his father is actually running the country, not him, for those 25 years. The next 16 years after his father's death, he is the king. So that's a total of 41 years. Achaz, the next king, rules for 16 years as well. This next Nevuah, Perek Zayin, chapter 7, happens during the reign of Achaz. So if you add 25 to 16, you have 41 years. So we are fast forwarding at least 41 years, but really more than that. We're into the reign of Achaz, and we're skipping all those years between the time when Yeshayahu first got his prophecy and this next prophecy, as we are now in the reign of Achaz. Now, we have to also know what is going on at this time. So, as we mentioned, Uzziyahu was a tzaddik, he made a mistake, but then he did tshuva for his mistake the rest of his life, the last 25 years of his life. Yosam is a huge tzaddik, and there's only positive said about Yosam in Tanakh, there's nothing negative said about him. And then comes Achaz. Achaz was a rasha. However, Achaz is mentioned in the very beginning of Yeshayahu. In the very beginning of Yeshayahu, it says, in the first pasuk of Yeshayahu, it says, Yeshayahu ben Amoz, he prophesied, Bimei, in the years of Uzziyahu, Yosam, Achaz, Yechizkiyahu, Malchei Yehuda. So it lists these four kings, Uzziyahu, Yosam, Achaz, and Yechizkiyahu. The Gemara asks, why would Achaz be listed among these other kings? The other kings are all tzaddikim. Uzziyahu, Yosam, Chizkiyahu, they're all tzaddikim. Achaz is a rasha. Why would he be listed among these kings? Now, there are a few answers given, but one of them, which is very relevant to tonight, assuming we get up to it, I think we will, is that we will find that even though Achaz was a rasha, and we will see evidence of his evil in tonight's shir, we'll see about that, but he does have a redeeming quality in that when Yeshayahu comes to speak to him, he is embarrassed. He is ashamed of his behavior when the Navi Yeshayahu comes to speak to him. we know that being ashamed of one's averos, even someone who is a rasha doing bad things, but being ashamed of one's averos is a madrega. That is a level. That is a significant thing to be ashamed of one's averos. Even if typically Achaz obviously wasn't ashamed enough to stop doing what he was doing, but when Yeshayahu came to him, he was ashamed. And that does give a certain level of kapara, a certain level of atonement, and therefore Achaz merited to be listed among the other tzaddikim, even though he's not a tzaddik. This is similar, but there's the difference is that in the example I'm about to mention, we're dealing with a real tzaddik, and that is that Shaul HaMelech, we know that he got a huge kapara for his involvement in the death of the killing of the Kohanim of Nov, because he was embarrassed about it. And we know about that from Sefer Shmuel. We learned about that at the time. So the shame that Achaz feels does give him a certain amount of redemption. The Achaz was the king of course, the southern kingdom of Yehuda. At the time of Achaz's reign, the king of the northern kingdom of Yisrael was Pekach ben Remaliahu. That was his name. He was the king of the northern kingdom of Yisrael. Pekach ben Remaliahu was not a friend of Achaz. If you follow the history, which is, you follow the Psukim in Malachim, you'll find that the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, they go through different periods. Sometimes they are enemies with each other, and sometimes they are friendly with each other. In fact, sometimes they're even family with each other. But Pekach ben Remaliahu is an enemy of Achaz. At the time of Achaz's reign, the northern kingdom, Malchus Yisrael, is very powerful. It's a powerful, powerful country that is able to negotiate with other powerful countries because it's a powerful country. Whereas the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Yehuda of Achaz, is a weak country, not powerful at all. The foreign country that is very powerful at this time is the country of Aram. Aram is the powerful country in the region for a lot of years. Aram is later going to be replaced by Ashur. Ashur is Assyria. Ashur is led by the evil king Sanherib. That will be happening actually shortly. But at the time of the way this story picks up, Achaz, the king of Yehuda, is under threat from two powerful countries, the northern kingdom of Yisrael, led by Pekach ben Remaliahu, and also Aram, which is the most powerful non-Jewish country in the region, which is led by a king named Ritzin. And they are each threatening Achaz. Each of those kings had wars with the southern kingdom, with Achaz, with Yehuda, during Achaz's reign. And in both cases, Achaz lost. He had already lost the war with Pekach ben Remaliahu. He had already lost the war with Ritzin, the king of Aram. And what we're about to find here is that the two of them, Aram and the northern kingdom of Yisrael, are about to make a pact that they're going to come down and for once and for all wipe out the southern kingdom and take it over. That's what they're making a pact to do. So understandably, Achaz is terrified. So that's what we pick up over here. The pasuk tells us, "Vayhi bimei Achaz ben Yosam ben Uziyahu melech Yehuda." It was in the days of Achaz, the son of Uziyahu. The son of Yosam, the son of Uziyahu, the king of Yehuda. It was in his day. Allah Ritzin Melech Aram Ufekach ben Remaliahu Melech Yisrael Yerushalayim. Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach ben Remaliahu, the king of Yisrael, they both came up together to Yerushalayim. La milchama aleha, to wage war with it. They wanted to wage war and to take it over. V'loyacholi lachem aleha, he was unable, or they were unable to make war with it. Rashi explains over here why would the Torah, why would the Navi have given us the lineage of Ahaz? It says that the days of Ahaz, the son of Yosam, the son of Uzziahu. Now we know that Ahaz is the son of Yosam, the son of Uzziahu. Usually, the Navi will not mention the Tzaddikim along with the Rasha, like we just mentioned before. And here it tells us the Rasha, the son of the Tzaddik, the son of the Tzaddik. Why would it do that? So Rashi explains the reason is because since we're about to say that they could not win the war against Ahaz, the Navi is telling us it's not because of Ahaz they couldn't win the war. It's because of his two illustrious ancestors, because of Yosam the Tzaddik and Uzziahu the Tzaddik. That is why they were unable now to defeat Ahaz. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Vayugad leveis David lemar. It was told to the house of David, saying, that means Ahaz. Ahaz's name is not mentioned over here because he was a Rasha. So it was told to the house of David, saying, Nacha Aram al Ephraim. Aram has joined forces with Ephraim. Ephraim is a reference to the northern kingdom. Vayana levavo ulevav amo. And his heart, the heart of Ahaz, and the heart of his nation, they swayed, meaning with fear, kinoa ad seyar mipnei ruach, like the trees of the forest sway because of the wind. The Gemara tells us that the trees of the forest are non-fruit-bearing trees. They're ilanei srak, non-fruit-bearing trees. The Gemara tells us when a non-fruit-bearing tree sways in the wind, it makes more noise than a fruit-bearing tree. The Mefarshim all explain that this has an empirical reason, which is that the fruit-bearing trees are heavier because of the fruit that hangs from them, whereas the non-fruit-bearing trees have nothing to weigh them down, and therefore they make more noise. But the Gemara uses this allegorically to tell us that the ones that don't bear fruit tend to make more noise, meaning meaningless noise, because they're trying to make themselves known for something, and therefore they if they're not tzaddikim, unlike the tzaddikim who don't need to make the noise, they feel they have to make noise. So here also, they were not tzaddikim, these people, and they were terrified of what was going to happen. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomar Hashem al Yeshayahu, Hashem said to Yeshayahu, Tzei na likras Ahaz, go now. Go out now to greet Ahaz. Atayu ushar yashuv benecha, and the remnant of your other children. Chazal tell us this is not a reference to his biological children, it's a reference to his talmidim, to his students. And you may be familiar with the yeshiva shar yashuv. It comes from these two words over here. Shar yashuv benecha. So go, you and your students should go out to greet Ahaz. El kitzei to alas habrecha el yona, to the edge of the aqueduct. Okay, the upper aqueduct. El mesilas sedei choves, to the path of the field of the clothes washers, the launderers. That's what a choves is. Now, here is, I mean, this is a little bit more detailed than you would have expected. They go out to the edge of where the water is, to the path of the field of the launderers. So the Gemara explains that when Ahaz realized that Yeshayahu wanted to speak to him, he was ashamed, and therefore he ran away to a place of tumah, to a place that he felt that Yeshayahu would not follow him in. And that's why it says to the edge of this area, because he wasn't going to go in after Ahaz. And the Gemara also says that Ahaz wanted to disguise himself out of shame, and therefore he took the utensil of the koves. What did the koves, what do they use, the launderers, they would use this utensil. I assume it was a metal utensil. Maybe it was made of a different material. And it was, I guess, what we would call a colander. It had a lot of holes in it. They would use it in order to launder the clothing. It was a way of laundering clothing that the water could come out, but at the same time would still wet the clothing, but it wouldn't just pour out. It would come out slowly, and I assume it was a way of cleaning the clothing and then getting the water out. Somehow it was a typical method of laundering. So this contraption is like a bowl-shaped item, and he put it over his head as a way of disguising himself so that that Yeshayahu wouldn't know who he is. That's because he was ashamed. Now, this was a very degrading thing to do. This item is not a clean item, and he did it out of shame. I don't know the details of how it happened. I assume the way I'm picturing it is that he tried to run away so that Yeshayahu shouldn't see him, and then he got caught somehow that Yeshayahu was now going to see him, so he grabbed the nearest thing he could find and put it over his head to avoid being seen by Yeshayahu. Either way, however it actually happened, the Gemara is telling us that he was ashamed, and that stood well for him, that he was at least ashamed of his averos.
So, yeah. That he was ashamed and not just running away from the nevuah.
Just because the Gemara says it. I don't know how the Gemara knows, but the Gemara says he was ashamed of, I guess, from this idea of the koves, but then he was ashamed of from Yeshayahu, and that's why his name is mentioned earlier in the first pasuk. So Hashem says to Yeshayahu, go to where Achaz is. Pasuk Dal, verse 4, V'amarta eleven, say to him, Hishamer v'hashket al tira. Hishamer, which means, it could mean to guard, but really here it means wait. Vahashkeit, settle down. Al tira, don't be afraid. Ulevavcha al yerach, your heart should not get melt. Mishnei zanvos ha'udim ha'ashenim ha'ele. From these two, an ud is a, there's a word for it in English. It's zanvos is a tail. An ud is a, like you have a twig or a branch that is charred at the end from the fire.
Smoking
fire. Yeah, firebrand, okay. Yeah, the stubs of the fire. These two sticks of fire, ha'ashenim ha'ele, that are smoking. What the intent over here is, these are two, what you would have thought are huge fires, huge, powerful fires. Nah, they're just little twigs with a little bit of a little bit of smoke on them, and they look a lot scarier than they are. Bachari af ritzin va'aram uven remal yahu, that ritzin and aram, ritzin who is the king of Aram, and ben remal yahu who is the king of, that's Pekach ben remal yahu of the northern kingdom, that in anger, meaning that they want to attack you, don't be afraid of them. Yan kiyatz alecha Aram ra, because Aram has tried to do evil to you. Uven remal Ephraim uven remal Yahu, Ephraim uven remal Yahu, Lamar saying, Nalev Yehuda unikitzena, we will go up to Yehuda and we will annex it. Vinav kiena ilenu, it will actually, unikitzena means we'll break it. Vinav kiena ilenu, and again we will break it to us, which means we'll take it over. We will put a king over it. We will make a new king. Es ben Tov'al. Who will we make the king in Yehuda? It will be ben Tov'al. Who is ben Tov'al? So Chazal tell us that using the type of, you can, the, one of the tools for drush is you can replace letters of the Aleph Beis, that you replace, the Aleph Beis has 22 letters in it. So the first letter of the Aleph Beis corresponds to the 12th letter, and the second letter to the 13th letter, and the third letter to the 14th letter, etc., so that each one corresponds to the one that's 11 letters later with it. Mm-hmm. So, and you do a replacement. Now, if you do that replacement, then the tests, did I do that right? 1 second. Yes. The tes will be replaced with the letter resh. The beis, not atbash. The beis will be replaced with a mem, 11 letters later.
Beis is mem?
Yeah, beis is mem, right? And the aleph is lamed, and the lamed is aleph, which spells ramla, or pekach ben rimal yahu. Now, whenever I see this, I always think of Ramallah. That's what I always think of. But anyway, that they want to put Ben Ramla, which is Pekach Ben Ramal Yahu, as king over Yehuda, meaning that they want to make it one kingdom, that it shouldn't be a split kingdom anymore, and it should be ruled by the northern kingdom. Now, that they don't want it to be a split kingdom is something positive. I mean, that is a correct sentiment. We don't want it to be a split kingdom. There are several nevuahs about the kingdom coming back together again. And that's a good thing, but it's the wrong king. The king's gotta be the king of Yehuda, who's gonna take over the northern kingdom of Israel, not the king of Israel taking over the southern kingdom of Yehuda. That's backwards. So that's what they wanted to do. So because of that, you're scared. Don't be afraid. Komar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem, lo sokum v'lo siya, this will not be established. This will not happen. It is not going to happen. Kirosh Aram Damesek, because the head of Aram is Damesek. Damascus was the capital, the area of Aram. Virosh Damesek Ritzin, and the head of Damesek is Ritzin, meaning that the only place that Aram will control is Damesek, and the only area that Ritzin will be the king over is Damesek, is Aram. Not more than that. They will not have any more control than that. Uva'od Shishim v'chamesh shana, and in 65 years, Yechas Ephraim Me'am, Ephraim will be cut down from being a nation. The 10 tribes will go into Golos. We'll explain the 65 years in a moment. It is not 65 years from here. We'll explain what it is in a minute. Virosh Ephraim Shomron, the head of Ephraim, meaning the capital of Ephraim, is Shomron. Virosh Shomron Ben Ramayohu, and the head of Shomron is Ben Ramayohu, meaning that's all they're going to have, not any more than that. Imlo Se'aminu, even though I know you don't trust me, you don't believe me, Kilo Se'amenu, because you are not trustworthy. Even though I know you, talking to Achaz, Yeshayahu says, I know that you don't believe me, because you don't trust in the Nevi'im, and because you're not trustworthy, nevertheless, I'm telling you this is going to happen. That you will be protected. Nothing's going to happen to you, not because of you, but because of your ancestors. Nothing's going to happen to you, and Aram will not be able to expand beyond its borders. Ephraim, meaning the northern kingdom, will not be able to expand beyond its borders. And in fact, within 65 years, the northern kingdom will no longer be. Now, what is this 65 years? It's actually not a nevuah from here. It is 65 years counting from the nevuah of Amos. Amos, who was the chief Navi before Yeshayahu, had a nevuah that the northern kingdom, if they did not shape up, would go into Galus. It would be 65 years from that nevuah, and then they would be taken into Galus. So, how do you count the 65 years? Amos, his nevuah takes place 2 years before the Ra'ash, before the earthquake, as it says in the pasuk in Amos. So you've got those 2 years. Then you have 25 years of Uzziahu with Tzaras, so that's 27 years. 16 years of Yosam, so that brings us to 43 years. 16 years of Achaz, that brings us to 59 years. And then, 6 years later, in the reign of Chizkiyahu, the northern kingdom will be taken into Golus by Sanherib, the king of Ashur. Ashur is going to become the most powerful nation in the world, by far, led by Sanherib, and they will take the 10 tribes into Golos. So that's how you count the 65 years. I want to make sure I got that right. 27 and 32 is 59, right. 6 years into the reign of Chizkiyahu. So it's not that many years from here. We don't know the exact date of this particular nevuah. It's sometime during the reign of Achaz, but it's not that much longer because it's just the balance of the reign of Achaz plus 6 years of Chizkiyahu, and then the 10 tribes are going to be taken into Galus.
What's the point of telling him this? He's a Rasha, and he's being told, don't worry about it, you're going to be okay, which doesn't make him want to change.
Right.
So, and the Navi says, you're not going to believe me, so it's not to calm them down, because you're not going to believe me anyway.
We're not done with this yet. It's going to get worse. So it's good. What you bring up is a good point. So look what happens next. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vayosef Hashem daber al Achaz lemar. Hashem continues to speak to Achaz. He doesn't actually speak to Achaz. He speaks to Yeshayahu to speak to Achaz. Sha'al l'cha'os me'im Hashem elokecha. Ask for a sign from Hashem. In fact, you don't trust me. Well, ask for a sign, and I'll give you a sign that this is going to come true. Ask me something. Look what he says. Hamek sha'ala. Ask for something deep. O hagbe'a lamala, or something really high up. Chazal say, ask for something deep. Ask me to bring somebody back to life as a sign that this is going to come true. Or ask me to do something upstairs in Shamayim, like something in the heavens, some kind of service sign up there. And that'll happen, and that'll prove what I'm saying is true. Vayomer achaz, lo eshal, v'lo anases Hashem. I won't ask, and I won't test Hashem. That sounds good, right? It sounds like he's saying, oh, no, you don't have, you know, I don't need a test. It's okay, I believe it. Chazal say, no. Achaz here did not want there to be a Kiddush Shem Shamayim, sanctification of God's name, that would come through him. He didn't want it. So he refused the sign in order that there not be any kind of Kiddush Shem Shamayim through Achaz. So he's rejecting it. He doesn't want it. So what I'm imagining over here is that the reason why all this is being done, is being told to him, is, first of all, even though he was evil, and there were certainly people among him who were evil, but by and large, we've said this many times, the southern kingdom of Yehuda were tzaddikim. The people were generally tzaddikim. The northern kingdom was much worse, but the southern kingdom, they were generally good. Not always, but they were by and large good. The kings were by and large good. And so it could be it was to give some reassurance to the tzaddikim who were there. But it could also be he was giving Achaz a chance. Meaning, you know, he was giving him, because he had shown some shame, so maybe he can still do better. And maybe there can be a Kiddush Shem Shamayim that would come through him. Give him some more of a chance here to extricate himself from his evil. But unfortunately, he gets worse. He actually digs himself deeper into a pit because he is unwilling to let Hashem's name be sanctified through him. And so therefore Yeshayahu continues. Yud Gimel 13. Vayomer, he said, Shimuna beis David. Listen now, beis David, referring to Achaz. Hama'at mikem halos anashim. Is it not enough for you that you wear out men? In other words, that you take away the tzaddikim, the neviim, that you make them not be believable, that you degrade the neviim, that you don't listen to their words. Kisalu games elokai. You're also going to, so to speak, wear out my God. In other words, you're going to diminish or downgrade Chas v'Shalom or Kiviyachol Hakadosh Baruch Hu. You think you're going to do that too? Therefore, there is going to be a sign, whether you like it or not. And this next pasuk is, as I mentioned in the email, one of the most misused psukim in Tanakh. Lachain, therefore, Yitain Hashem hu lachem os, Hashem, he will give you a sign. Hine ha'alma hara violedes bain. Behold, the young woman will become pregnant and have a son. Vikaras shemo, she will call his name Immanuel. Hashem is with us. There will be a son born to the young woman. Who is this young woman? It is the wife of Yeshayahu. That is the young woman that is being mentioned over here. Alma means a young woman. It does not mean a virgin. That is a mistranslation of the word. Nowhere in Tanakh does it mean that. It just means a young woman. It could be a besula, but that's not what the word means. And it is a reference here to Yeshayahu's wife, who will become pregnant, and she will have a son, and she will call him Immanuel. Now, Chazal say that Yeshayahu's wife later on is going to be referred to as a Neviah, as a prophetess. She'll be referred to as a Neviah. As Rashi explains, nowhere do we find that a Mrs. Navi is called a Neviah. And she's not called a Neviah because she's married to a Navi. If she's called a Neviah, it's because she is a prophetess. That's why. Now, she's not listed as one of the Shiva Neviyos, the seven prophetesses that are mentioned in Tanakh. Let's just pause for a second. Let's reiterate something we've said many times. There were over 1 million Neviim and Neviyos, over the 1,000-year period of Nevuah. It was over 1 million of them. Only 55 are mentioned in Tanakh, 48 men and 7 women. That doesn't mean those are the only ones, but those are the ones that have recorded Nevuah. Nevuah shehutzruchu ledoros. Nevuah that is needed for all generations. So we have a list of the 7 of Yos. We also have a list of the 48 Nevi'im. The wife of Yeshayo is not mentioned as one of the Nevi'os. That's because we don't have a Nevuah from her. It means we know she was a Nevi'ah because the Navi calls her a Nevi'ah, but we don't have any words from her that, and that's why she's not listed. The 7 Nevi'os is not an exhaustive list of how many Nevi'os there are. It's how many Nevi'os that we have a recorded Nevi'ah from these women. So we don't have one from her. But she is a Nevi'ah. What is her Nevi'ah? Her Nevi'ah is this line, that his name is going to be Immanuel, that she will have a Nevi'ah. Now, it's unclear to me when she has this Nevi'ah and how it's said, because this sounds like Yeshayahu is having the Nevi'ah. It's unclear to me whether he got this from her, that this is going to be his name, or whether somehow later she had a Nevi'ah that this should be his name. It's unclear to me how that works. But Chazal say her Nevi'ah was in calling his name Immanuel, that this is the sign is what's the sign that everything Yeshayahu is saying is going to come true, because he says my wife is going to become a Nevi'ah. That's the sign. You don't want to have a sign in Shamayim. You don't want to bring somebody back from the dead. So here's what's going to happen. My wife is going to become a Nevi'ah, and when that happens, you will know that my Nevi'ah is true when she becomes a Nevi'ah. That's the way Rashi explains it, although I'm a little fuzzy on exactly how her Nevi'ah works. But that is the way Rashi explains it, yes.
Do we know her first name?
I don't know her first name.
Okay. And how is this going to be a Kiddush Hashem if people can't know about it?
What, if people can't know about
if
what?
If they know that she's going to become pregnant,
I'm saying I'm fuzzy about that. I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know what information was left out that she provided. That's not clear in the pasuk.
Her having a son doesn't seem miraculous.
Right, that's not miraculous. She was young. That is true. But it's the name that seems to be the main thing. But I don't know how that works. I don't know what happened over here that she didn't know that. Them saying they knew. I don't know.
But she didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
It would seem to me from.
If all these people knew, right, it's going to be
right. That's
know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what's. I have the same question. Okay. So I don't know. I'm not sure what was not known that she was going to find out, and it would be through Nevuah. But apparently there would be something. Now, what's that?
It seems strange.
Yeah. Now he continues and he says, "Chema udvash yochel, this son will eat." Chema, which is, we translate it as butter, but it's really the cream of the milk, and honey he will eat, which means that there's going to be bounty in the land. Right now, in the southern kingdom, things are very bad. Things are, because of how weak the country is, they do not have bounty. They don't have all kinds of goats and honey. They don't have all that. But this child will be born and there will be tremendous bounty. Really, what it means is, despite the fact that now things are bad, and Ashur will make it worse, as we will see, but nevertheless, this son will eat, the cream and honey. L'daito mos bara uvachor batov. And he will, when he know that this will happen, when will he eat cream and honey? When he is old enough to reject the bad and choose the good. When he's old enough to reject bad and choose good, then at that point already the 10 tribes will have been taken into Galus, and Ashur, as we will find out later, will be destroyed. And things will be incredible in the southern kingdom under Chizkiyahu. Ki beterem yeda hanar Mos Baro Vachar Batov, because before this child knows to reject the bad and choose the good, the land that you are afraid of, the land will rid itself of these two kings, of Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach ben Remaliahu, the king of the northern kingdom of Yisrael. The land will rid itself of those two kings. And there will be, therefore, bounty in the southern kingdom. That really, to me, sounds like what the sign is, that everything's going to go well in that way. But, as I said, Rashi mentions the nevuah of Yeshayahu's wife. Yeah.
Does the chema of the dvash have anything to do with
chalav
v'dvash?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the same idea of zavas chalav v'dvash. Yeah. Yavi Hashem alecha v'al amcha v'al beis avicha. Hashem will bring on you and on your nation and on the house of your father yomim ashalo va'u, days that had not come. L'miyom sur Ephraim me'al Yehuda, from the day that Ephraim, that the northern kingdom separated from Yehuda, that days will come that have never been before. Eis melech Ashur, Hashem is going to bring the king of Ashur. Now this is a tremendous prediction, because at this time Ashur is not powerful. But Hashem, he's saying Ashur is going to be the new power of the world, and it's going to create a whole new world order. And that is in fact what Ashur is going to do. Besides the 10 tribes being taken into Galus, all nations will be exiled. Sancherev is mevalbel es kol ha'umos. He mixes everybody up. An incredible upheaval happens in the world under Sancherev, and Chizkiyahu is the last vestige of independence from Sancherev, and that there's going to be a miraculous salvation, and it will have to do with the almost coming of Mashiach, which we talked about in Malachim, and here we'll talk about it again, which we'll get to it as we move along in Yeshayahu. V'ayah b'yom ahu, will be on that day. Yishrok Hashem lazvuv asher b'ktzei yorei Mitzrayim. Hashem will whistle to the flies that are in the edge of the waterways of Mitzrayim. That's the irrigation ditches. V'la devora asher b'eretz Ashur, and to the bees that are in the lands of Ashur. A reference to the massive armies of Egypt, the massive armies of Ashur that are going to come up against Eretz Yisrael. Uvau v'nachul kulam, and all of them will come up and they will rest, they will dwell. B'nachale habatos, in the crevices of the land. Uvinikike asloim, and in the crevices of the stones. Uvachol hana'atsutsim, and in all of the, I forgot what this word means.
Thorns,
thank you. Uvachol hanahalolim, I think it also means thorns, right?
Bushes,
okay. In other words, they're going to be all over the place. They're going to be everywhere, hidden, waiting to ambush everybody. It's going to be incredible, meaning terrible, that they're going to be all over the place. These armies, Sancherib is going to come with a gigantic, massive army of over 1 million men who are going to come and are going to attempt to capture Yerushalayim, attempt to take over. They will have already gotten rid of the 10 tribes, and then they're going to come for Chizkiyahu. And this next pasuk is a pasuk which we will read, but we will discuss not tonight. Bayom ahu, on that day, Yigalach Hashem besar hasechira. Hashem will shave using the razor of the razor that was earned, the earned razor, I guess that's the best way to say it, earned through work. What did it say there?
Hired.
Yeah, okay, the hired razor. Be'evrei Nahar, with those on the other side of the river, B'melech Ashur, the king of Ashur, Es harosh, the head, v'sar haraglayim, the hair of the feet, v'gamas hazakon tispeh, and also the beard will be destroyed. Hashem is going to use a razor and cut all the hair off of the body of the king of Ashur. This is a reference to all of his officers, all of his soldiers, all of the leaders. Everything is going to be cut away from the king of Ashur. He'll have nothing left but himself, as all of his entourage, everything, the millions of soldiers that he has, all of them are going to be destroyed. And then things will go well for everybody in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, let's keep reading over here. Things will go well in Eretz Yisrael. Things will get better because of that. You know what? We are going to stop over here. Let me just explain what happened so far. Is that Yeshayahu says that you don't believe me, Achaz, but this is what's going to happen. There's going to be this destruction of Aram and this destruction of the northern kingdom under Ashur, under Sancheirav, which is going to be the new power of the world. They are going to bring into this world something that's never been before, a new, whole new world order, and they will come up with all kinds of soldiers all over the place who will be prepared to attack and conquer the southern kingdom of Yehuda as well, but Hashem is going to stop them, and then things are going to go well for the southern kingdom. This Pasuk Chaf, verse 20, we discussed this in when we learned Malachim, because that's also where this story is brought up. And as we mentioned then, the Gemara tells a bizarre story about this Pasuk. So you can go back and learn about it in Malachim Beis, but we will, Mirz Hashem, next time, lead off with this Pasuk and the bizarre story, and do the best that we can to explain how that works. But it's a really, really bizarre story about the downfall of Sancheirav and how that's going to happen.
How long between the time that the Northern Kingdom was taken into Galus and Sancheirav was destroyed?
How long between the time that the Northern Kingdom was taking the Gullus and Sancheirav was heard? Very short. I don't know the exact amount of time, but it's very short. He defeats the Northern Kingdom, and then he turns his attention to the Southern Kingdom.
And then he falls flat, so Alan's didn't come home.
Oh, you wonder why they didn't come home? Yeah. Because his falling flat doesn't undo all of the bilbo, all the mixing up that he did. They were taken away.
He
was in charge, but those who succeeded him were also, there was no interest.
No,
yeah. Hashem didn't want the 10 tribes back. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, I mean, that's a reason too.
Yeah. I mean, the real reason. You want to know practically how it happened.
You think there'd be attempts. I mean, because like Ephraim left early and you think there'd be attempts
to come back.
I'm so baffled by why give the Nebuah to this king. This Nebuah to this king, because it's not going to happen during his lifetime. He's not going to feel the effects of it.
Well, I think he could have. That's the thing. I think he could have done tshuva. I think that's the point. That he.
But he kept going after the point where he didn't.
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
You know.
I hear you.
I'm so puzzled.
I hear you. Also, Mirz Hashem, I will try to get a little more clarity on the wife of Yeshayahu and that child being born. We're gonna learn more about that child being born later on. But I'll try to get a little more clarity on that sign. Exactly.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.